Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. I'm Douglas Mpoga. This evening we'll talk about the future of the East African community. And with us tonight is Nelly Mora Nyangorora. She's a Kenyan independent journalist. She joins us from Nairobi. Good evening, Nelly.
Good evening.
How are you doing today?
I am fine. Nairobi is cold, but we are keeping warm and keeping safe.
That's very good. And also joining us is regular panelist Suleiman Mgula. He's joining us from Durban, South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. Suleiman, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're welcome. Tonight, as I said, we're talking about the future of the South African community. It's an intergovernmental organization composed of six countries in the East African Great Lakes region in East Africa. That is Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, South Sudan, Tanzania, and Uganda. The community was founded in 1967, collapsed in 1977, and was revived in 2000. Let me start in Nairobi. Nearly recently, we've lost two leaders in that community. We lost the Burundian president, although he had just sort of retired, and recently lost the one in Tanzania. How do you see the change in one leadership in some countries affecting the growth of the community?
Thank you very much for that question. When we look at the community and the loss of the leaders, we see that prior to the loss of these leaders, the community was not, let me say, was not vibrant. There's been some kind of lull in the community, and significant events have happened this year. That is during the appointment of the new chair, that is now Kenya, President Uhuru Kenyatta taking the chairmanship, and Burundi becoming the rapporteur. And we are seeing some significant activities happening around the community. Prior to that, before the election of President Kenyatta to the chairmanship, and the chairmanship by Rwanda's President Kagame, there's been a lot of frosty relations among partner states. The partner states that in the community we have Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, Burundi, Rwanda, South Sudan, Somalia, and Somalia has applied to join, and the application is still awaiting approval. So we see that among the community members there's been bad blood. Uganda and Rwanda have been in a border dispute. Uganda accusing Rwanda of deporting and detaining its nationals, and Rwanda claiming these were people who had crossed their border illegally. And Rwanda also being accused again, Uganda accusing Rwanda of shooting fatally some of its citizens again who had entered into Rwanda. And this even brought a problem in the border. It was close for some time. Then there's also been the other issue with Burundi and Rwanda. Rwanda on the spot for claims that it had it was involved in the attempted coup of President Nkurunziza. And that issue came to the East Africa Community Platform. But because Rwanda was chairing, this issue was not resolved. So there's been that bad blood, Burundi not attending meetings. And with the new leadership, we are seeing now Burundi came back to the table. Tanzania again with having issues again with Kenya, with the demise of President Magufuli. We are seeing the new president becoming very aggressive and looking at the activities she has been involved in since she took over power. There is some indication that she's keen on having better relations within the community. She made a visit to Uganda, where they signed a multi-billion-dollar pipeline. Then we have seen she's visiting Kenya, and today they've announced that they are keen on reviving bilateral relations by reviving the joint Commission on Cooperation that was first started by President Nyerere in 1988 with the President Moi of Kenya. So we are seeing that somehow with the new leadership, there is a flicker of some hope for the revival or for the vibrancy of the East Africa community.
I see. Suleiman, Nelly mentioned there she's a bit optimistic about the revival of the community given the change in one country. But the unfortunate part is that, according to some analysts, the community has the leadership that is a mishmash of democratic governments, strongmen. Can such a community thrive?
I agree with Nelly that to date, the situation has been frosty almost all around. Maybe to go backwards, we must say the organization was revived out of nostalgia, because the first one, the one of 1967 to 1977, was a remarkable organization, was an enviable organization. It had everything to be envied. Why? Because by the time it was established, there was a lot in common with the three countries that formed it. They had grown together. First of all, there is blood relationship within most of these East African countries. You find that apart from the colonialists dividing them, you find that these tribes almost crisscross one another. You find so many tribes in each other's countries. So there is almost blood relation. That was observed at the beginning in 1967. So there was a lot in common. They were all got independence almost at the same time. They had leadership which was agreeable to one another. They had visions which were almost common. That is why they were able to form the organization. There was almost a common vision for all the countries. So that is why they were able to make an organization which was enviable, with a common railway system, airline, education system, postal services. It was really a remarkable organization because they were all growing together. They almost had similar political system. They were almost at equal economic development. So by then, it was easy for them to make an organization and succeed. Now, when they are coming after the collapse and the revival, they are reviving when the countries have moved in different direction. There was almost economic stagnation in Uganda. Kenya had shot up. Tanzania was following. So you find that by now, there is a mismatch, as you have said. Economically, they are moving at different levels. Politically, as you are saying, if I can start with the politics, you are having different systems. You are having a democratic system in Kenya. You are having a dictatorial system in Uganda, or an elected monarch in Rwanda, almost an elected monarch in Burundi, though now it has changed. Then you have got another form also in Tanzania. Southern Sudan also is struggling. You don't know where to put it, whether they are democratic or not democratic. So the systems now, when you look at the political leadership, they don't have anything in common. So even the leaders themselves, they are so different. Their visions are so different. As we are saying, others are dictators. Kenya is moving in another direction. Economically, Kenya is far away, followed by Tanzania. So you'll find now, for example, the wars which have been there, they are wars of protectionism. So Kenya wants to defend her economy. Tanzania wants to defend their economy. So there is an economic war between Kenya and Tanzania. Then you find also another either political war between Uganda and Rwanda, and then again between Burundi and Rwanda. Then So the whole community seems to be in shambles, in short, as Nelly has said. So at the moment, though, the president of Tanzania is trying to revive the relationship, and she has been, as you said, she has been in Uganda, now is in Kenya. But at the background, much as she may try to revive it, but when you look at the fundamental issues that divide them, there seems to be a lot which needs to be done if they are to have a successful organization.
Nelly, to what extent, in your opinion, do the disparate leadership styles or governance systems in those seven countries a factor in making things difficult for the community to prosper?
Yeah, this is a major factor, because when you are working towards political federation and yet you have different values or conflicting values, it is bound that you might not agree on some very salient or rather critical issues. Because when we look at the forms or the systems of government, you see Uganda even removed the presidential term limit. And when you come to Rwanda, their term is 7 years. The others are five years. We're talking about Somalia, who are also trying to come into the federation, I mean into the community, and also South Sudan. So when we have this kind of very diverse systems or forms of government, we are bound to have people who are not really committed to the community, because they are basically fighting for their political survival and they define aspirations. But as it may, we see that the major issue, that the first step towards achieving regional integration was to have a customs union, a monetary union, and a common market. And when we look at activities around those issues, because the political federation was one of the, it was the ultimate goal, but progressively through first achieving a customs union, allowing free movement, free flow of goods and services, non-tariff barriers, a common market, social integration, and labor, ensuring that work permits are not prohibitive, or and just removing any barriers to investment by among partner states. So we see that when it comes to the monetary union, there's a progress towards that, because in their meeting that they held in February, they committed to have an ECB, so that is 2 months too, and that is towards achieving a single currency. So when we achieve a single currency, we will be moving towards deeper integration. And we also see that the other issues that surround the politics have affected how they relate, because when you look at the leaders in the area, they seem to be strong men. You go to Rwanda, you go to Uganda, they have their ego, and this has come into play even in decision making, because everybody feels they're superior, their opinion is more superior. But when they look at it as a club and come up with rules, and maybe the rules must be revolving around human rights and democracy, perhaps then that will be one of the issues to unlock the long-standing obstacle towards achieving regional integration, fully achieving regional integration.
Well, for those just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. Tonight, we are discussing the future of the East African community. Our panelists are Nelly Mora Nyangrora, she's a Kenyan independent journalist, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst, joining us from South Africa, and I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Washington. Suleiman, Nelly there tried to explain how the major goal is the political federation, but many analysts and observers have said achieving a political federation is a big task, given the disparate, she mentioned the egos of some of those leaders there. I don't think that's realistic.
It's not realistic at all, because as Nelly has said, we have got different leaders and different leadership style. For example, if I'm to compare, let's say, the former Tanzanian President Magufuli and Uhuru Kenyatta, you look at people who are focused at governing their country, at pulling their nations from poverty. They have got a vision. Look at a country like Uganda. Some time back, as a community, they agreed, for example, Kenya agreed with Uganda to build an SG railway. The Kenyans built theirs from Mombasa to Nairobi, proceeded to the Ugandan border. To date, Uganda has never even put 1 kilometer of a railway line. I mean, leadership. Uganda is a landlocked country. It transports most of its imports through Kenya. Any sensible leader would have thought of having to haul the goods over using railway line. But look at the leadership. They are not even bothered. They are not even focused. Then came the oil pipeline. Again, Kenya looked at them. One, two, they turned around and went to Nairobi. So you look at the Ugandan leadership, you ask yourself, how does the leadership in Nairobi look at the leadership in Kampala? Do they trust them? Are they people to do business with them? If they can't do business with them, then how can you have a federation with such people? How can you have a common market with such people? Look at the economic activities. Ugandan economic activity, Uganda is a free market. Everybody goes and sells out. There is almost no control. It has been Chinalized. The economy is deeply Chinalized. Tanzania, by then, Magufuli was looking at developing the economy in their way to benefit their people. So is Kenya. So when you look at the different leadership style and the different policies, it shows you that there is a lot which needs to be done, and especially it is circling around the type of leadership, the type of governance which the countries have. Until the governance systems are sorted out, you can't have any movement on any sector. Let it be custom union, let it be common market, let it be regional economic integration. You won't have it until you have got a proper governance system within the region.
Nelly, following up on that, it seems to some people that instead of cooperating and working together as a team, there's been some pushback and competition among the member states. Suleiman there mentioned the oil pipeline. It first was meant to go through Nairobi, through Kenya. Now it's going through Tanzania. Recently, there was a ban of Ugandan corn, grain, or what is maize or whatever, into Kenya.
And sugar and milk.
And sugar cane. So how can you, advance when you are competing and working against each other's interests?
Yeah, that has been the main I'm doing with the integration, because the constant rivalry that even saw Kenyan chicks, they were banned. 10,000 chicks were banned by President Magufuli. And there are also other people detained for crossing over the pastoral. They are from Tanzania, from the lower Taveta into Tanzania. So we see that this kind of rivalry will not only help to undermine the commitment to integration. And there's also that issue of suspicion, because we see that the president already came over to Kenya. He was given a ride in the SGR, the road of President Uhuru Kenyatta. He was even given some motivation by some incentives extended to him. President Kenyatta was committed to giving him part of Naivasha for a clearing, to be able to have it as a clearing port for the dry port. But all this, it seems that the president of Museveni was not very keen to embrace, because on the other hand, he was being enticed by Tanzania, but the other route was cheaper and more viable for him. That is, so we see that that kind of rivalry and suspicion only furthers the gains made towards integration, because every country is fighting for its own survival. Just like I've mentioned, Rwanda and Uganda, forced relations, and yet again, they're also working on having, working together towards the infrastructure development that extends into Congo. Then there's Tanzania again, also trying to undermine Kenya so that the other partners work with it and not with Kenya when it comes to infrastructure expansion. And that is why when we look at how President Suluhu Hassan is moving, it seems that she is realizing all that, and there is that change of strategy and in terms of how Tanzania has been operating in the past, because President Suluhu seems committed to having a vibrant East Africa region, because when she was addressing her parliament during her inaugural speech, she did regret the loss of revenue because of the derailing of intra-trade flows. She did reckon that there was a lot of red tape, there was a lot of laws and policies that were inhibiting trade between partner states in East Africa. And she also pledged to have that addressed through the revival of the joint commissions and cooperation. And that is a pledge that she has revived in Kenya today, with President Uhuru also echoing the same. So we're seeing that this renewed relation, this renewed visit, she even extended an invitation to President Uhuru to attend Tanzania's 60th celebrations of its independence, which will be much very soon. So we are seeing that Tanzania, who has been playing hard stance politics on the integration, is trying to warm up, to engage itself to the other countries, in Uganda the other day, Kenya today. We don't know what next, where next is going. But looking at all these activities and what has been the hindrance to integration in the past, especially on this infrastructure development issue, to me, I feel there's reason to be optimistic that things might be working towards a better East Africa community going forward.
I see. Suleiman, it's interesting because the East African community should be an easy push. As you mentioned earlier, the initial three were almost, the people themselves can do this in a day. They don't have a problem. This one, I think the main problem is the leadership to agree on certain things, basic things. Otherwise, the people are integrated more or less already.
The people have never been a problem. The people have got blood relationship. They have had their relationship. They trade across the borders always, with or without the East African community. But now the leadership is becoming a problem. As Nelly said, the egos are too much, so much that before the community, before the integration and the big documents can be signed, they need to go back to the drawing board to start with to clear bilateral relationship between countries, because now months and months the border between Uganda and Rwanda has been closed. That border is a gateway to DRC. That border is a gateway to Burundi. So if Uganda and Rwanda cannot speak, and the community itself cannot intervene, the parliament, East African parliament, cannot intervene, the leadership itself, their egos are too heavy, they cannot come down, then you cannot have a community. Burundi and Rwanda, they are on and off on each other's necks until when they have cleared their relationship, until when they have pulled down their egos, and they come to understand that their personal relations is less to the needs of their countries, then you cannot have a community. As we speak, when you look at the relationship, yes, Sara Sul is trying to to put up to clear the bilateral relationship, which should be the way to go. But then other countries also have to emulate the same. Uganda has to extend its hand to Rwanda. Rwanda has to extend its hand to Burundi. So until when we have got those bilateral relationships cleared, I don't think the community will have any step forward. I think it will remain a PR exercise. I think it will remain just an emotional exercise for the people, just to entertain themselves, but practically without clearing the relationship, unless there is leadership, there is change of leadership, maybe in Uganda and Rwanda and Burundi, and we get democratic leadership, that is when maybe we can have a meaningful East African community. But at the moment, with these egos around, with everybody thinking is better than the other, I don't think we can have the East African community as it was expected to be.
Nelly, briefly, what was your comment on, because as I said, the people, for them, they are ready and willing to integrate. They're almost as good as integrated.
Yes, the people are a key item in all this integration process, because without the people's participation, we cannot get really useful contributions towards how to have the community operate or be structured. Because like right now, there is a process that is ongoing to have a constitution for the federation, for the political confederation. There's a committee that has been doing consultative engagement with the people. And to get the ideological contribution from the people, you must make them aware of this process. But as it is, it is something that is being done in an elitist manner, because the real people who integrate, those at the border will intermarry, those who have challenges in their citizenship being acknowledged, because you find, like, let's say, Kenya, Tanzania at the border, a Tanzanian woman has come into Kenya and has a child, and they go back with that child, getting recognition for that child as a Tanzanian becomes a problem, and vice versa. So it is the people who are on the ground, the common person, who should be involved in giving the ideological views and contributions that will shape how the political consideration can work. And without the involvement of the people, without commitment of the summit that is the head of state for this integration, and without the goodwill, we can just say that regional integration is just but hot air.
I see.
Because it's not tangible or deliberate effort towards a common market or towards a political configuration of federation.
Well, we shall keep watching the situation in the South African community, but that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to Nelly Mora Nyangorora, a Kenyan independent journalist. Nelly, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for hosting me.
You're welcome. And Suleiman Mugula in Durban. Suleiman, thanks a lot for being on the show.
Thank you. Pleasure is mine. Thank you very much.
You're very much welcome. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can hear our roundtable on the internet. All you have to do is go to our main website and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, wishing you all the best.
I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next up, the U.S. Politics Edition. We talk with political gurus John Fortier and Jim Kessler about the fate of President Joe Biden's infrastructure package, voting legislation, and his $6 trillion budget proposal for 2022, which analysts say would herald a new era of big government. That's Encounter.